The following program is brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, and the views expressed may not necessarily reflect the views of this station.
All right, this is Scott.
This is Pat.
We've got a great program for you this week. One of the things we're going to talk about, Pat, is why it's more important to be financially prepared for retirement than the actually retiring in and of itself. Then we're going to talk a little bit, how do you avoid regrets about your retirement?
Yeah,
and talk about just some retirement transition strategies. So stick around for Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining us.
That's right. We're glad you are here with us today as we talk about the world of finance and investment and all that stuff. Both myself and my co-host, we are both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We meet with people like yourself each day during the week and come to the studios to be your financial advisors on the weekends. Whether you've got advisors you're working with now, or you're doing things on your own,
you just started, or you're a seasoned veteran, or you want a second opinion or a third opinion. In fact, I can tell you, you come here, you call with a question, you're going to get a biased answer, which is what you want. Is a biased answer. It's an opinion. By its very nature, an opinion needs to be biased. But our bias is based not on how big of a commission we could generate or some sort of sales quota or any other factor other than the fact that we're just trying to help you make better decisions.
Yeah, our basically our advice is, I mean, as a radio, obviously we're designed to generate an audience.
Yes.
So I guess there's a little bit of that. But after 20-some-odd years of doing the show...
Well, Scott, we're supposed to generate an audience with our sparkling personalities.
There we go. And just to give honest, straightforward advice, which is what we do with this program.
Yeah, so at least we could do one of those two things well.
Which is what?
The honest advice, the sparkling personality
Probably
thing.
Not. I'm kind of thinking the sparkling personality may not be...
But
we've been doing this a long time, and obviously we've been broadcasting for many years. And if you're new to the program, then welcome. But the nice thing about a program like this is that you can call with a question, get a second opinion, a third opinion. And every week, one of our advisors will talk about a story that someone was essentially taken advantage by someone who called themselves a financial advisor.
Which was a commissioned salesperson.
Sold them some product. And so, look. You might as well do a little bit of background, get a second opinion, if that's the case. Or
Scott, so think about this. We rarely see an issue with a client having an unsuitable investment that uses a fee-based advisor.
Not if they're truly a fee-based advisor. I can't think of any situation.
Not if they're a registered investor.
That's because they've got their interest aligned.
If they are, in fact, acting as a fee-based advisor when they're actually, or a registered investment advisor when they're making recommendations.
If you want to join the program, love to take your call. The number to join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 1-888-242-6766. And we'd love to get you on the calls. And we're going to go to the phones right off the bat, and we're going to talk with Eric in Northern California. Eric, you're with Hanson McLean.
Thank you for taking my call.
Hi, Eric.
I have a question about Social Security and taking our benefit. And I'm 64. My wife will be in July. She doesn't have enough hours in or enough quarters in to get it on her own.
Okay.
Because she took care of the kids and raised my family and did all that wonderful stuff. So if she waits to take, I guess I have to take it and suspend, or do I still have to do that for her to, if she starts taking it now, how does it
so
work
are,
as far
are,
as?
Are you, Eric, are you still working?
No, I'm retired, too.
You are. Okay, so you have no earned income coming into your household whatsoever, is that
correct?
Wage
income.
Wage income.
That's correct.
And when were you planning on starting your benefit?
I'm not sure. But if I need to take it, and suspend, I would do that. So then she could start taking hers, I guess.
Yeah, the file suspended ended. There's a small window of people that are grandfathered. I don't think you fit in that window.
I think you had to actually file before a certain date for that.
Because that's a history thing now.
Yeah. So, but that used to be that was a great technique.
Yes,
we would have
told
file and suspend.
We would highly recommend that a couple years ago.
Yeah, but the rules have changed, as they will continue to change in the future.
So here's one of the things that people don't take into consideration, right? So you've got a spouse. So if you look at some of the calculations, people say, well, the longer I wait, the more I'm going to receive, right? But the longer you wait, your wife has an opportunity to earn essentially half of your full benefit.
Once you actually go on benefit?
Yes. But half of what you would have received had you waited till 66. If she takes it early, she'll have a reduced amount as well.
Do you need the income?
Not now, no.
Okay. And how is both you and your spouse's health?
Well, mine's kind of dicey. Hers is fine.
Okay. So
you pass away, and she could be entitled to 100% of your benefit as a survivor's benefit.
That's correct.
Right?
So if she started taking hers, she can't take hers unless I take mine.
That is correct.
That true?
But if you don't believe you're going to live to a normal life expectancy,
then you want to take it earlier and not later. If you were in perfect health and you had a normal life expectancy, which no one knows,
no one knows what their normal life expectancy is. Of course.
Yeah, correct, right? I mean, I could give you the exact right answer, Eric, if you could tell me the date you were going to die, which is a terrible, morbid thought if you think about it. But if you believe you have a shortened life expectancy, you may want to start taking Social Security benefits early.
Yes.
If you had a normal life expectancy, we would probably encourage you to wait until age 70 before you start a Social Security benefit, because the longer you wait, the better the benefit. Couple caveats. If you have a really high net worth or big income earner, you might want to take it early.
What's your spouse's health like?
Very good.
See, the thing is, Pat, she would receive whatever he is receiving. So if he waits a little.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. Social Security really needs to be in consideration with every other financial asset you've got. So do you have any pension income?
Yes.
And what's your pension income?
About $3,600 a month.
And did you take a joint and survivor on your pension? So if you pass away, what does your wife get?
She gets the full amount.
The full amount.
The lower amount. So when I pass, she gets the full amount.
Do you have any other form of income?
No.
Do you have any money in a 401k, IRA, or any other savings?
Yes.
How much, approximately?
We have maybe $150,000 in investments.
And your home paid for?
Yes.
No, it's a push.
Really, it's a hard, hard decision.
So what we're really kind of thinking is, what's in the long term, what's going to be have the greatest economic benefit
for the both of you?
I think if I were in your situation, I would continue to defer.
I would defer. When you say your health is not good, I mean, does that mean that will you live another 15 years, 10 years, 20 years?
I'm looking at. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
You don't have a terminal issue going on right now.
No, I don't have any.
Got it. That's what I was looking for.
Well, here's what I would recommend, Eric. We've got about a 15-minute long, maybe it's a little longer than that, a webinar on our website on Social Security, and we break down all these little nuances on it. It would be worth an investment of your time just to watch that webinar. It's laid up pretty simply. So at HansonMcLean.com, you'll find the webinar for Social Security. I would recommend watching that.
And while I was there, because that will be so, so enlightening and thrilling. In fact, there's been banter about an Academy Award for this webinar. After you watch the Social Security webinar.
It's not fancy, but it's got good information.
Yeah, it's guys like us actually talk about Social Security. How exciting could it actually get? But After there, you might want to watch the 7 Personal Decision Points for Retirement Transition webinar as well.
Okay, so then she can't start taking hers unless I start mine.
That's correct.
Yeah, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yep. That's correct. So the question is, how much longer
do you defer? If you both start today, you'd receive a reduced amount, and she'd receive 50% of that reduced amount. But then let's assume you pass away sometime in the future. She'll continue to receive your reduced amount. Whereas if you wait, she'll receive that higher amount.
Higher of the two. So yeah. That's what makes it a difficult decision is that your health issues. I'd probably kick it until 66 or 67. If I was going to ballpark. But it's worth going to HanselMcLean.com and watching the Social Security webinar.
Okay, great.
Yeah, appreciate the call, Eric.
All right, appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Thank you. And the thing is, I think the fact that they don't need the income right now.
And he's got a great pension.
Yeah, they don't need. Which she would continue for her, but if you think about inflation in the future and everything else, if they don't need the income,
better off.
I don't think they'd be a target if Congress ever started to reduce benefits based upon their income level.
Correct. If his income was $200,000 a year.
It's taken now. What are you waiting for?
Yeah, because there's a good chance that Congress at some point in time is going to wake up in the morning.
How many retirees have incomes of $200,000?
That's exactly my point.
I understand. That's right. They're not a very big voting block. They're out there, yeah. And you might be listening and think, well, that's me. They're out there, but they're not.
Yeah, it's not like, or even $100,000 a year. Yeah. What percentage of the population retirees do you think have an income of $100,000 a year? Less than 10%?
Yeah, well, yes. There's no question about that. The majority of Americans don't pay any, retirees, Social Security recipients, don't pay any taxes on their Social Security income.
Yeah. So small. Or majority.
And the reason we're stating that is a low it's a low threshold before you start paying tax on your Social Security.
Yes.
Ideally, you really don't want to plan a retirement if your Social Security income is not going to be taxed, because that means you have a very low.
It's $25,000 a year as an individual before your
provisional income, which is a complicated part. Anyway, 1-888-2 Hanson's the number. We are in Lakewood, Colorado with Kevin. Kevin, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Great. Thanks, Kevin.
Awesome. I absolutely love your show. Listen to it all the time.
Well, thank you.
Wonderful.
Thank you. Do you listen on terrestrial radio on KOA out of Denver, or do you listen to us on a podcast, or both?
Actually, I listen to you on the radio,
94.1.
All right, good.
KOA.
Yep.
All right, how can we help you?
Okay, my question to you guys is, right now my current situation is I'm 58 years old. My wife is 57. We'd like to retire when we're 60, and it's kind of an early retirement for us. I can't believe we're actually even having these thoughts of doing this. But I love
it. You know, it's funny, Kevin. We do a lot of retirement workshops, retirement transition, and one of the things I always like to do at the start is I'll say, how many of you, since the first workshop you've attended on retirement, and it's invariably 80% of the hands, and it's like, here, isn't it? How are you at this stage in life already?
Yeah, you know, it's funny, Scott, is when I started doing these retirement workshops and retirement planning 25 years ago, I was never talking about myself. I was always talking about someone else. And now when I'm doing it, I'm having this self-reflection.
Anyway, this is about Kevin.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry I made it about me again.
Okay.
Who do I think I am? Who do you think I am?
You know, I'll continue with the morbidness from your previous caller, because I don't look at any of this as that, you know, as morbid, because of the fact is, what's actually feeling is that I look at the fact that if I go from zero from birth to 28, from 28 to 50, 58 to 88, two-thirds of my life are already gone. So that's an attention getter. And I know that the next 12 years at age 58 are not going to be as kind as the first 58.
Good point.
So I know the next 12 could be rough.
It could be great, though.
It
could be great. Absolutely.
So do you think you're able to, you'll be able to retire? Well, you said at age 60, right?
At age 60, and I feel that I can, but I thought I would like to talk with you and kind of get your input. So would you like some of my stats?
Yes, fire away.
So this is the situation. 58 and 57, we have $1.5 million in our 401k accounts. Then we have $40,000 in an HSA account. We have $100,000 that we have in a non-interest-bearing credit union slush fund that's just, you know, simply for emergencies and whatnot. We have around, give or take, but I'll go low on it, we have about $600,000 in a house. The house is paid off. We have no credit card debt. We have no auto debt. We do have on the side $40,000 because we are going to be picking up a new vehicle here at the end of the year, and we're going to do that when they have end of the year's savings and sales and whatnot. So we're So that's kind of our picture.
What's your current income?
My current income, right? Household income or
sure.
Personal income? Okay, our total household income is 280, almost 300, about 300.
And how much of that is going into savings? So 10 years ago, what was your income, family income?
Let's see, 10 years ago, our income was probably 220.
Okay. And do you have kids that have grown and all that?
Or out of the house?
Yep.
Or
so, yep, no kids.
So here's the initial impression on this. Your standard of living is going to go down significantly.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you've been saving half of your income.
But based on his savings, it doesn't appear that he's been saving half of his income.
Yeah, so what we've done pretty much is we started – actually, so I'll preempt this. We started – this whole thing started 20 years ago. We had absolutely nothing 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So we went from nothing to this. And we pretty much have tried to live pretty easy. We maxed out our 401k accounts, and then we probably just over the last probably 4 years have been able to put another $20,000 into the credit union on the side. So I can honestly tell you that our current just basic living expenses are about $18,000 a year.
Where's the rest of the money go?
The rest of the money goes into our 401k account. It goes into taxes. It might sound like a lot of money, but when you start paying taxes...
Kevin,
let me ask you this question then. Let's work the other way around.
Kevin, it is a lot of money.
How much income do you feel you need for retirement?
I feel that if we had right around, I'm going to say, $60,000 a year, we're good.
Okay.
All right.
Well, that's doable.
There you go.
So, here's how we just, it's real simple. It's, if you just assume, let's say, a 4% withdrawal on your retirement savings, this isn't mm-hmm. counting any Social Security income that'll be coming in. I assume you have no pension. Is that correct?
We have no pension.
Yeah.
Correct.
So, I mean, right there's $60,000 a year, not counting your other investments. If at age 60, you say $60,000 a year, house is paid off, we don't have any kids to worry about, that's enough income for us, then there's
4%,
no question.
Yeah, yeah. I could tell you, based upon your income and living off of $60,000 a year, it will come as a lifestyle change, which may be good.
It may be worth it.
It might be. I don't have your job, right? I don't know whether you get up in the morning and you think, oh, I've got to go do that again, or you say, yeah, I could do this a couple more years. But your lifestyle will certainly change. Jasmine, we're going to send
maybe for
him
the better.
We're going to send him. We're going to send you our book.
Personal decision points.
Personal decision points that Scott wrote. And I say we, it means I'm going to pay for part of the postage, but Scott wrote the book. I want you to read the book and then go to our website, HansonMcLean.com, and watch the webinar. In fact, Jasmine will actually send you a link to the website to watch this seven personal decision points.
And this, Kevin, we don't mean to be alarming, right? So you've got someone, and there'll be other listeners saying, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? Why should there? Retiring at 60 might be the absolute best thing for you, and it might be the total right thing for you to do.
Yes. As long as you're asking the right questions. So what we're going to do is the seven personal decision points is going to quantify that for you.
And is your wife working? Does your wife work full time as well?
She works full time also. Yep, she has her own business. She has a small business.
And will she sell the business?
No, she will. The business that she has isn't anything that you can really sell. It's a service industry that she has. So, when she finishes that, she would just close her doors and wean people off.
Let's go out 2 years from now. You're 60. You're retired. What's that next decade look like?
Yeah, what do you get up in the morning? What's it look like? Do you travel? Do you go down to the Mickey D's and get the value menu and drink coffee in the morning?
No, you know what we do is we are super active, and we've done several staycations just to kind of see how things play out. In fact, I'm on one right now for 12 days. So we intentionally stay here, and after a couple of days, we kind of decompress a little bit. Then we start to say, okay, let's get on with what we're going to do. So we find ourselves out on the motorcycles. We find ourselves out cycling. We sometimes will go out to the shooting range. We will go hike. I mean, we have lots of things we do. Plus,
what's the last thing you'll do? You'll go what?
Hike.
Oh, hike. What's your profession?
Yep. You know, I'd rather not say.
Okay,
that's fine.
So, Kevin, do you have a job that your employer will let you actually work less?
Yes, and that's what I'm going to do. At the end of this year, my plan was to work 2 days a week, and at that point, I can make 2 days a week. I can make $60,000 a year.
There you go.
And out of that 60, what I'd like to do though is probably I might be able to save about probably $10,000 out of that. Because they will not give me access to a 401k, so I'm going to take some post-tax money.
Yeah, you would just spend it, and not take money out of your. But here's what you want to think about. Most people don't really want to leave the workforce. If you talk to people, they will tell you, I want control over my life and my time, but I still want engagement. I still want appreciation of my contribution to an organization, but I want to be able to take 3 weeks off and
or
work
3 months off.
Or 3 months off or work, whatever the number is, they want that. Our recommendation to anyone that has the ability to do that is to try to do that before they step into retirement full time, because it's much easier to do that. I cannot tell you the number of clients that we have that have left the workforce at age 60, stayed home for a year and a half, and then re-entered the workforce, and it had nothing to do with money.
Oh yeah. Matter of fact, if you look at baby boomers, Kevin, if you look at the people that are working in retirement ages, the higher one's education level and the higher their income level, the more likely they are to be engaged.
By the year,
now, there's kind of a barbell because there's also the other end where there's people that don't have a choice.
I was reading a statistic this morning. By the year 2020, they expect that 25% of those people over the age of 65 will still be employed in some form or fashion.
25% of people over the age of
65 plan on continuing to work. So think about retirement as, you use the word staycation.
The nice thing is you're at the financial resource. You said if we had $60,000, we could make a swing it all. So you're there from a financial independence.
That's not what I'm worried about for you.
And part of it is because the income level, you're not the kind of guy that no one just kind of accidentally stumbles upon
a $225,000, $300,000 a year income.
Right.
Right.
It's you've worked hard your career.
They don't stumble on, a net worth of $2.5 million.
That's
right. You've done something right. So you used the word staycation. 20 years ago, the word staycation actually didn't exist. That was made up, right?
Yeah, from the financial crisis. Yeah. We all felt good about it.
Yeah. So let's make up a new word for a working retirement.
Or some sort of flexibility. Yeah.
No, I'm going to work on it. I'm going to make up a new word for working retirement.
Okay, you do that, Pat.
I'm going to work on it
now. That'll really help Kevin out tremendously. So I think your question for us, the financial guys, is can you afford to retire at $60,000 a year? Our answer would be yes. So,
and what this does, though, just as a footnote, is what this does is this puts us out to almost 90 years old living, on this type of an income. But I feel this way with it, too, that we can actually give ourselves a little, a pay raise over the years because we won't be tied to a pension. And my understanding is a lot of retirements are kind of front-loaded, so people kind of spend a little bit more up front, and
as time goes on, they kind of
wind it down. We are going to travel some, but we're not going to go absolutely crazy because none of us are big airport people. Mm-hmm. Like I say, we're super active. We love the outdoors. We love skiing and snowboarding and all that. But I know, like I was saying, in the next 12 years, I don't see very many 72-year-olds out on a snowboard.
No, but
they're out there.
I know, but I'm 55, and my last year of snow skiing was last year because of my body issues.
I'm a pretty avid cyclist, and a group of guys I cycle with, my buddy who's almost 64, we did a 200-mile bike race.
Of course you did.
He won. He was he was faster than the 10 of us that all raced this thing, 200-mile bike race.
He's 60. Yeah. Most people out there don't go out and ride 200 miles in a row, Scott.
Well, he 20-mile, he'll kick someone's butt, too.
All right, well, Kevin, you're fine. You're thinking about the right things. Just try to think about how I can be engaged somewhere in the workforce that lives for your lifestyle. And we know this. After working with over 7,000 people and 4,000 plus couples, that we have been through this retirement transition so oftentimes, it's the psychological aspect that is every bit as important as the money.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, and I've looked at that, and I feel that sense of urgency, though. Like I say, when I look at this timeline, I work in an industry that I don't always see the 65-year-old cyclist out there. I a lot of times see the 58-year-old who is.
Well, Kevin, you know what? I think it sounds like you're on the right track. You're thinking the right things. We got to take a break, so I don't have too much. I would love to chat with you more because it's a pretty interesting story. But I think baby boomers are looking to retire. But here's somebody to look at. You got the financial resources. You want to go out and play. Now's the time, right?
Yeah. Don't wait till you're 75.
1-888-2-HANSON is our number if you'd like to join us. 1-888-2-HANSON. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
You know, it's I was listening to a podcast this morning on retirement stuff. It was actually...
Was it your own?
Yes, because I like to listen to myself. No, it was somebody else.
Sometimes we get the family together. The kids...
just how people are approaching retirement differently. And I think what you'd said, Pat, it's most people want control over their schedule and their time.
Isn't that what you want out of
Absolutely.
Your job?
Yeah. Well, so it's funny. I was talking to someone and I told them, I said, I had overheard a conversation, full true story. So it was at the beginning of a workshop, which I do. We do these workshops periodically. And I heard these two guys talk in the back, and there was something effective. Yeah, never trust someone who is talking about retirement if they're still working themselves. So I'd overheard it, so I went up and had a conversation with them. And I said, I heard your guys' conversation here. I said, I appreciate that. I plan on never retiring.
Yeah.
And they said, what do you mean? I said, I don't ever want to retire. We started having some discussion about it. And I said, you know, I've been very fortunate in the fact that when Pat and I started Hanson McLean almost 25 years ago, we were both working our tails off, right? I
mean, there was 70 hours. It was a half-time job. You could work any 12 hours of the day you wanted.
That's pretty much it, right?
Six days a week.
It's
the way it is.
Yeah, when you're starting a business, that's how it goes. So, but as time had went on, we've able to be in a position where can have some chunks of time off, can schedule it so that things aren't always dripping every moment, and kind of a rhythm where, I'm 50 now, so I don't know what I'll feel like when I'm 65 or 70, but I have no urgency to retire. Not to say that I haven't planned, because we also know that roughly half of us are forced into retirement early, and the majority of those are through health issues. So there's a chance that
things are going to change.
Myself or a spouse can. So clearly want to be prepared for retirement.
And you're in an industry, Scott, where you actually have that flexibility.
Correct.
There's certain industries.
There's not.
It just doesn't. It doesn't exist. It doesn't. Doesn't exist.
But I think if you think how things have changed, if people in their say 50s, when it's the time when people really start getting serious about saving for retirement, right? Particularly once the kids, if they've got kids in school, it's like after that time, once they're out of high school and the college, they're thinking, oh crud, I've got to finish paying for my kids' education. Then we got to really worry about retirement.
Yeah, it almost happens simultaneously as the last child is actually going to college.
So I think that decade, though, which is really important that you do start saving for retirement if you're behind the curve, being financially able to retirement is crucially important. We strongly believe in that. But I think also if you can think about how can you structure your life in such a way where maybe you can still be engaged in the marketplace in some way, but on your terms, not on your company's terms, to give you some flexibility. And the people we see, And I mean, Pat, we've seen it both. We've got clients that have been retired that have tons of financial assets, millions of dollars. I remember one guy, he told me, this is like a year ago. He'd been retired 7 or 8 years. And we're having a kind of long conversation. He says, you know, to be really honest, I regret retiring when I did.
And why?
Because he misses the
social interaction.
He misses. Of course, then again.
Then you'll remember.
Oftentimes we'll forget the pain.
It's like a high school girlfriend. When you think back about them, you don't think about how crazy they were. You just kind of remember the better stuff.
High school girlfriend? Did you have a lot of high school girlfriends?
I had enough.
What does that mean, had enough?
My point being is that oftentimes when you look back in history, things appear a little bit rosier than they may have been.
I never had any long-term high school girlfriends.
I didn't, I was
a typical male with all the hormones going on, but I didn't want everything that went on with a relationship at 16 years old.
I come to think of it, I did.
I don't think you struck me as a type.
Oh, it was so much long-term. Like, what? I have to talk to you again?
What do you mean? I was supposed to call you back? I was hanging out with my buddy.
You know, the phone's right in the kitchen where everyone can hear me. Remember?
Yes.
The phone.
Oh, I had one buddy. He had a girlfriend for like 2 years. He's one of those odd guys, right? And she would find out. We'd be at someone's house playing poker or something in high school, and she'd find us. And looking for Courtney, man, we gave him a hard time. Of course.
So I have a son that's had a long-term girlfriend. He just graduated from high school. And I asked his little brother, I said, are you going to get a girlfriend? And he looked at me and he said, what, are you crazy? He goes, you see how much work that is?
We are way off topic.
My point being.
What is your point on this?
I completely forgot.
It doesn't matter. Anyway, this is Hanson McLean. We talk about financial issues and retirement issues.
And it's
stuff.
A relationship.
I guess different seasons of life. Maybe
that was my point.
A different season of life.
That was my point. Thank you for bringing me to the point. Hey,
and by the way, I was at the gym this morning, and some guy was next to me, kind of an old friend, he was complaining about his hips or something. And I said to him, I said, you know, I love everything about getting older except the physical aspect. But I think everything else about it is great. And I think people can look at retirement as the same thing.
Yes.
So to join the program, 1-888-2-HANSON, 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 and let's go
So we actually have a blog on our website where we actually write different articles, and we actually can see
we actually have a blog.
We can see how many people read them. So we send out a weekly email, which I would encourage you to sign up. Go to HansonMcLean.com. Sign up for the weekly email. But there is an article that's on our website that has actually had a lot of traffic, and it's called Three Things to Consider Before You Relocate. So this is stuff, content we produce in-house.
Based on our experience.
We base it on our interaction with our existing clients and people that are considering becoming clients. And we take this information, distill it, and then share it with you. So if you go to HansonMcLean.com, three things to consider before you relocate. And at that point in time, I would recommend you sign up for our newsletter because that's self-serving. I would like you to.
They're going to get much more benefit than you are, Pat.
Okay, but it's still a little self-serving.
Yeah, but you know, you think about it, and we will grab back the calls for David. One of the things we've said in this organization for years is that if someone comes in and meets with us and they need our services and for whatever reason do not become a client, we've always said they lose out much more than we lose. Whatever business economic benefit we'll get out of the relationship is much smaller than
trying to help someone make the right decisions.
Yeah.
I agree.
Particularly those that you can see.
And the newsletter's free.
Yeah.
And it comes in your email. You don't even have to walk to wherever you walk to get your mail. Which, by the way, I was having this conversation with my son the other day. Why they deliver mail 6 days a week is beyond me.
I don't get it every day.
No, I don't understand.
I only get it every few days before. I'm afraid it's going to get so full that I'm going to have to drive to the post office to get it. That's the only reason I get the mail.
Why it's 6 days a week is just absolutely.
Out of 20
I know why it's 6 days a week.
Yeah, of course.
All right.
Political issue. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number to be part of Hanson McLean. And let's go to Fairfield, California, talk with David. David, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hey, good morning. You guys are awesome this morning. I just love loving it.
Oh, well, thank you.
Hey, okay. I'm a 61-year-old, 100% disabled, retired, unemployable vet. Okay, they wrote a letter of unemployability for me when I turned 100% about 5 or 6 years after I retired. Anyhow, I self-employed myself because I applied 57 places and nobody called me back. I self-employed myself with a home-based business, making 18 to 25K. I could actually make more if I worked more. But
wow, good for you!
But I applied for Social Security disability because was told I was eligible for it.
Uh-huh.
But then not too long ago, just a little while ago, because of my work in the community, yep, I got offered a part-time job teaching at one of the local schools. And so I'm worried that if I do that, will I suffer on my income penalty,
you know,
or something like that with Social Security and all that?
Are you married?
Yes.
So that income that you're making self-employed should be affecting your Social Security disability as well.
If it's under your name.
Okay. If it's under your name.
Yeah, everything is under my name. But my disability part I didn't get the Social Security. I got rejected.
Where are you getting the disability check from?
The VA.
Oh, God.
It's non-taxable. Because I'm 100%, and also
I don't know the answer.
I don't know the answer either.
I don't know
the
answer.
My gut tells me no. I'm more familiar with civil service type pensions that can also be tax free in nature based upon disability and other work.
But your gut tells you that it won't affect.
It won't affect. It.
Yeah, but I'd call the Veterans Administration.
Yeah. I'm sorry, we don't have the
and
different disability schemes. Schemes kind of. That name works fine in England.
You're right, because if you saw the way that these guys, the Social Security evaluated me, you'd laugh.
Well, no.
Your sobriety check, but
your Social Security you would not be eligible for because you are self-employed. The way you would get around that possibly is not you actually be self-employed. Your wife is self-employed, but
you're looking at getting a job as well. I would contact the department there for the pension.
And my guess is it will not affect
it. Yeah, that's my guess.
That would be my guess, but I don't know.
They have 100%. No method. It's not like Social Security. It's through the whole tax system and the reporting. They see exactly what other income's coming on, and that it's designed to look at those other incomes through your tax return. I've never heard of another sort of pension plan that is impacted the same way. Now, there's some work disability plans that, if you go back to work, we'll have some reduction. But this is a
veterans. You want to call them?
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, we don't have an answer on that.
Appreciate your service.
Well, I was going to say, because my VA pension is taxable, but my disability part of it is not.
That's correct.
Yeah, I get
the portion
disabled. Okay. I understand that. Yeah. So that's why my gut says no, because when I've seen other civil service pensions, there's not an impact. But we don't want to give you a definitive answer, and we're not 100% sure.
No, okay. I'll still go back and check with Social Security disability.
Not Social Security. You're not getting Social Security disability. Check with the Veterans Administration. You would not be eligible.
The ones that told me that I was eligible for it. So.
Yeah, but you're not now because you're working.
Yeah, you're not eligible for Social Security disability. Just flat out. We know the answer to that.
Okay.
You're working.
Yeah, you've got reportable self-employment income. So count that as a blessing, though. You know, it's an interesting, and I appreciate your service, and I don't know where your disability is from, clearly, and I mean this sincerely. But count it as a blessing that you're able to do some work, even if it has some impact on those benefits. There's not just the financial benefit of working, but there's a lot else that comes with that.
Right.
Emotionally, when you're able to do some work as opposed to being totally disabled. So,
because I'm not a sit at home watch the grass grow kind of guy.
Well, most people aren't. Some people do it. It's not really what they choose to do. It just kind of happens. So I would consider that even if there's some reduction there, which I don't think there is, but even if there is, rather than being frustrated about it, just remember that it's a blessing that you're able to do some work and not totally disabled. So, David, appreciate the call and wish you the best of success moving forward.
Give it the phone number.
1-888-2-HANSON to join the number. 1-888-2-HANSON.
You know, yes? It's archaic that we actually file, most people file a tax return. Because the government, for 75% of the population, the government actually knows where all your income comes from.
Yes.
So you made me, you brought that to light when you said, you know, the government actually, Social Security, they know what your income is. So why do we file a tax return? Why do most people have to file a tax return?
Are you trying to bring logic to the system?
Well, maybe. Okay. All right. Good point.
How about the fact hardly anyone ever gets audited?
That's a good point as well. As a percentage.
It's almost. I've never been audited. Have you been audited by the IRS?
No.
They've questioned a couple things over the years, but not like a full audit.
No, never been audited.
I think I'd be a good target, frankly.
All right. You want to give me your Social Security number and your home address?
Here, have at it. But you know what's interesting about David's call? So as he was talking, I thought about all those programs out there that safety net type programs that give a disincentive for people to work.
Yes. Right?
It could be Social Security disability.
It could be unemployment. It could be
welfare, housing vouchers, all that stuff.
Is correct. Because you're getting something for doing nothing. And it's the measurement of for work above that getting something for doing nothing.
In Bill Clinton's administration, he did a lot of work on welfare reform and a lot of work in this area, made some progress. Things have slipped back since then. It would certainly be, I think, healthy for the overall economy and for most individuals, frankly, to have.
So who's going
to
actually do this so-called work?
I don't know.
Now?
No.
Work on legislation?
Trump, he's got nothing else going on.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Actually, right, the good thing about this is nothing will come out of Washington the way it's being run now. That's the good thing.
Considering they do more harm than good?
Yes.
Yeah, maybe. And now it's time in the program where we talk real advice. And this is where we have one of our financial advisors join us and talk about a real-life experience they've had with someone who's come to Hanson McLean. And always keep in mind that each individual story is unique. This is not intended to be any sort of endorsement of Hanson McLean. And you might have a different experience than what this particular client had. In any case, we've got David Schauer joining us today. David's a certified financial planner, chartered financial analyst, et cetera, et cetera. And
been with us for 18 years?
Yeah. And, so, David, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you. I have to agree with you, Scott. I think the worst part of aging is the physical.
How old are you, David? You're like 40-something, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
And, recently married.
You're like 40. Yeah. Are you
for
not
first
40?
Time, right?
No. I'm 42.
And recently married for the first time.
Yes. Yes. Congratulations. Yes.
And although you keep saying 18 years, I think you've been saying 18 years for the past 2 years. It's actually going to be 20 here.
20 years.
So. Yeah, believe it or not.
Wow. How lucky are you working for
David's
yes.
given the best years of his life
to these knuckleheads.
Okay, what's up? Tell us about...
What's up? Okay, sure.
Yeah.
So in the past, some of these have been a little more complicated, and I think this is, I think, can be much more to the point. So this was a person who was 57 years old. They had an IRA, actually a number of IRAs, but they knew they were going to be having some health, or they had some health issues that they knew they were going to be dealing with surgically over the coming year. And with health savings accounts, and they had a high deductible plan, with health savings accounts, you have a one-time lifetime ability to roll over from an IRA to an HSA. And we decided that
regardless of your age?
Regardless of age.
And
yes.
And is there – so to roll from an IRA to an HSA, is there a time limit?
A time limit as to when you can use it?
Yeah.
Not to my knowledge. We were planning this for the following year. We knew they were going to be in a high deductible plan. So we basically rolled over the maximum, including the catch-up provision, which is an extra $1,000 after the age of 55, and knew that they were going to be using it this year.
What is the maximum approximately?
Approximately $7,500.
Okay.
With catch-up.
Got it.
So obviously, taking it out of an IRA, which would have been the alternative, would have come with some issues.
Taxation,
you have to meet taxation. You have to meet certain threshold for it to be penalty free. And this was a way to basically roll the funds into an account that would allow them to come out 100% tax free as well as penalty free.
And David, how often have you utilized this for any other clients in the past?
I think we've used it, I think, two or three times. Right,
the firm-wide.
No, I've used it. I don't know firm-wide numbers. I just know I've used it two or three times that are coming to memory.
Yeah, so so people have a one-time, and not everyone has HSAs. They're still, I've been using them.
Well, explain what an HSA is.
Health savings account.
I know what it is, but we're talking to the listeners now.
It's for people that have a high-deductible health insurance plan through their employer.
So it's in a money that goes into an account that is actually goes in there
tax-free.
Right, tax free if you use it for medical.
Yes.
Yes.
But otherwise, it's just tax deferred if you don't use it for medical.
Correct. So what would? Why wouldn't somebody? Most people say, once they're in their 60s, say, why don't I take a chunk of my IRA and put it in an HSA?
Because there's no right. Why wouldn't you do it anyway, David? Because
you could. Yeah, obviously, depending upon. People may want to use those funds for other means, so it depends upon their own situation. But I would say definitely – I would probably defer it as the limits continue to go up on HSAs. For instance, if you had done it a number of years ago, your limits were much lower. As the limits continue to go up, I think it's more beneficial.
And you only get to do this once.
One time in a lifetime.
So far.
Yes.
Well, under the current rules.
Yes. Well, which is the challenge with health care planning, of course.
I think there may be a loophole for a second time. I haven't done that. But if you change from an individual plan to a family plan, so basically if you go from being yourself as an individual and you get married and have kids, I think there may be a loophole there for you to do it a second time. But I've not done that, so I've not looked into it in detail.
All right. Well, hey, appreciate this. So basically someone in their late 50s got some health expenses coming up. Here's a way to take money from an IRA, transfer to a health savings account, and avoid any taxes on it.
So essentially,
not have to worry about being 59 and a half.
It could have saved them $2,500, $3,000 in taxes?
Yeah. Yes.
Depending upon their marginal tax rate?
And that's about probably about what it was for them.
That's just good planning, David. So. All that education's paid off. Just think of what a great advisor you'll be by the time you're like 45.
Dave, thanks for joining us on Real Advice. Thanks for being part of Hanson McLean.
My pleasure.
And you know, it's Pat. We had an email. We did a retirement workshop at Aerojet, a big defense manufacturer, for some of their employees. Not at Aerojet, at a different place, but for, we're not endorsed by Aerojet.
Aerojet employees attended this.
But I received an email. I think it might have been addressed to both of us. Because the workshop was coming up, and it was essentially financial advisors charge 1% a year. How have you done compared to the S&P 500 over the last 5 and 10 years so that I can see whether I can – it's to justify the fees that you charge? And I looked at it and I said
– That's part of it? That's part of it?
Obviously, the money management is part of it. But like this little thing that happened, what we just witnessed with one of our advisors – as life happens to us all, health issue with ourselves, something going on with a family member, right? Aging parents to deal with, a troubled child that we have to figure out how to support, whatever issue. Just life, right? Then things happen. A good financial advisor can help navigate through those and find the most advantageous way to help fund those. First of all, help plan for those to begin with.
Yep.
They're not... You know, when someone says that they don't have any money because their car broke down and they weren't expecting it, well, cars break down. So, a prudent thing is to plan that your car is going to wear out.
It wasn't because not having money didn't make your car break down. The car was going to break down whether you had money or not.
Plan for it. Yeah. So it's planning for those things. And Vanguard did a study on the value of a good financial advisor. This, we're talking about a good financial planner, probably someone who's a certified financial planner, that sort of thing. And it stated that the relationship with a financial planner could add up to 3 percentage points a year in total return. Now, this wasn't because, and this is Vanguard, which is primarily index. They do have active managers, but a lot of index funds, low cost index funds. And we like Vanguard. It wasn't because it was about outperforming the markets. It was through planning techniques such as this one just looked at.
Tax techniques, spending techniques, mortgage debt, how to manage that, when to take Social Security income.
All those issues.
All the periphery stuff above and beyond asset management. Let me ask you a question.
And then, but about half of that extra return was attributed to that. The other half was attributed to the behavioral management side of things.
Of keeping that person invested.
Well, keeping them invested. I mean, like, the challenge for this year is, how do you keep people having...
From reaching out on the risk?
Yes. How do you keep someone in a conservative portfolio when that's appropriate for them?
Let's go to 9, 09, 10, and 11.
Of course,
my question is this. When someone says, how have you done compared to the S&P 500? Fair enough question, but wouldn't the next logical thing to ask that question is, do you own the S&P 500 and how did you stay invested, let's say, from 2005 on? Did you ride that S&P 500
stuff
a whole way? And the answer is yes.
Well, the fact is, for many of our clients, the S&P 500 fund is the largest holding.
Part of their portfolio.
Yes. But I'm just...
But Scott, our average client, what was the S&P 500 down at its low?
56% or somewhere right in there.
Okay. So our average client...
We're not down anything close to that.
And the reason is they couldn't withstand. They're retired at 50%, 60%.
No one wants that.
So to compare a portfolio to an S&P 500, which is a benchmark, is a great theoretical practice, but it's theoretical only.
Well, and if you're going into retirement or nearing retirement, I think outperforming some index, how does that impact your life? How does that translate into, are you being able to maintain your same standard of living?
Which is what you're interested in. When you're in retirement, we're proud of our returns. We're not hiding behind any excuses. We're proud of our returns. But the reality is, our average client is more interested in not being poor than they are in being rich. The average retiree is more interested in not being poor than they are in getting rich.
It's not really the time of life to... I mean,
listen,
if you want to take a piece of your portfolio and speculate with some piece of it,
fire away.
We actually have a lot of clients that do 5% of the portfolio in a separate account, and they do all kinds of... They have fun with it.
Fire away.
It's not the time... That you're going to take on tremendous.
It's not when you want to push out on the risk return ratio.
But anyway, that's Hanson McLean's belief after.
But that was
enough. There you go. Over the years, that most people at retirement stage is about protecting their same standard of living and not going broke. So anyway, we are running out of time. It's hard to believe that this hour's gone. But you can tune into this program every week at the same station at the same time. We're here every week, and we plan on being here for many more weeks to come. Of course, you can also get a podcast of this program. Go to HansonMcLean.com. If you're kind of new to podcasts, there's actually a little instruction video on how to do one. Or you can just go on your iPhone or your Android and just go to the App Store or the whatever.
Download it.
Android. Download it simple and sign up. It'll get dropped off each week. And, you know, visit with one of our advisors. I think you'd find it worth your while. Anyway, we're out of time. This has been Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. We'll see you next week.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence.